Witnessing her mother-in-law's suicide changed the life of former Miss America Betty Maxwell. Despite it being one of the most difficult and lonely seasons of her life, God taught her ways to cope with grief in a biblical way. As a result, her spirit and marriage grew stronger. I'm Kendra Semin. Stay tuned and learn how to take hold of God's strength in the dark moments of loneliness. God's word promises in Proverbs 3:6 that if we acknowledge Him in everything we do, He will direct our paths. This statement holds true not only for America, but also for our daily lives. The gospel message is simple. Put God first in everything you do. Matthew 6:33 and Luke 10:27 say this: "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." Next, love your neighbor unconditionally. Luke 10:27 says, "You are to love your neighbor as yourself." Next, love your neighbor unconditionally. Luke 10:27 says, "You are to love your neighbor as yourself." And lastly, fulfill the Great Commission. Mark 16:15 says, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel," that is, the good news, "to every creature." If you want to see America continually blessed, now is the time to step out in faith and spread the good news. This is faith in action. Wherever we go, every faithful Christian is compelled through obedience to Jesus to share His simple three-step gospel message all across our land. For more information, please go to the website at www.putgodfirstamerica.com. That's www.putgodfirstamerica.com.
Welcome back to our mental health series on the Charisma News podcast. Today's guest is Betty Maxwell. She's the author of the book Miss Unlikely, From Farm Girl to Miss America, talking about her journey as Miss America 2016, married life, her faith, and other things. She's also a YouTuber, a speaker, and a lot more. So, Betty, welcome, and thank you for joining us on today's show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we'll dive in deeper.
Sure. It's always like a lot when, you know, you try to list out everything that I'm doing, but I've always had my hands in a lot of pots. I was Miss America 2016. Right after that, I moved to Nashville with my then fiance, now husband, and recorded my first country music album. After that, we moved back to Atlanta, where I signed with my acting agency and modeling agency, and I'm currently a motivational speaker. I'm still singing, doing events all the time, and lots of motivational speaking. And then, of course, my acting and singing career and modeling career are also kind of taking off. This past year has been like my first year of really getting into the acting scene, because before then I've always done theater acting, but I've never really gotten into film. And so that's what I'm doing right now with my agency. I actually just shot my first movie. I was a supporting role in a movie, which I'm really, really excited about. The movie is called Game Changer. It should be coming out around 2020. And then, of course, my book. I just released my first autobiography. I say first because I really, really hope that there will be another one. I already have ideas for the next book. But I'm really, really excited about everything that I've got going on. I love having my hand in lots of different areas and wearing many hats. But that's the Enneagram 3 in me, for all you Enneagram people out there. So that's kind of what I got going on right now. And, of course, I do it all with my amazing husband, Spencer.
Yeah. You're definitely super busy. That sounds so exciting. I'm an Enneagram 1, so I'm really like, I get a lot of things done, too. I'm like a planner. And I've kind of been an extra in a show before. I really like Stranger Things, and so I got to do that a little bit, and that was super
cool.
Fun. And
that's
I love
awesome.
Broadway. I love theater, so I totally get all of that.
Totally.
Yeah. That's so exciting. So you grew up on a farm with a family that was very close, it seems like, from reading your book, and you were raised with a strong faith in Christ, and you struggled a little bit when your parents got a divorce, and then dating life, and, you know, that kind of stuff, which That makes sense. I think a lot of us have gone through that. And your time in college was busy. You had some trials. But if not depression, were some of those moments just a time of anxiety for you?
Absolutely. I mean, I think for everyone, you know, new things are hard, like going to college, going to high school, going to college, going to new schools, changing schools, of course, parents going through divorce, 60% of marriages end in divorce now. So I feel like those are things that everybody kind of goes through now, or everybody can know someone that has been through that or been through one of those things, or, you know, dating life and everything. It's just hard. And that's why I thought it was so important to include those things in the book, because those things seem so trivial and so everyday, but no one really talks about them because they're so everyday. And to see someone like me, a public figure or a former Miss America, talking about such, you know, little things but can relate to everybody, I feel like that's what's motivational. That's what's inspiring, is hearing someone in the public eye talking about those things in a relatable way, so that everybody can be like, oh, well, I've dealt with that too. Oh, well, I've been through that too. But I've never really heard anybody talk about it before. And that was one of the biggest things, I feel like, not only with dealing with Spencer's mother's death, but also dealing with my parents' divorce. It's just so many people go through this, but no one wants to talk about it. And I think it's so important that I included that in the book as a public figure and someone in the public eye, so that everyone can feel like, oh, hey, I've been through that too, or I can relate to this too. And seeing someone in the public eye talk about it, I feel like most people feel like public figures and influencers on Instagram are so superficial and they only show the highlights of their life. But I am willing to talk about the not so awesome things that happen in life too, in order to hopefully help other people.
Yeah. And I think that says a lot about you, just that you're down to earth, you're vulnerable, you're transparent. And I think that causes more people to want to trust you too, because like you said, a lot of public figures want to make it look like they have everything together and everything's perfect.
Right.
And then like
right.
you said, that's not relatable though. Like
right.
we're all human beings and we all go through difficult times. And when people like you are brave enough to talk about it and make a difference and be like, hey, you're not alone, I'm going through stuff too, and
exactly.
I'm here for you, like that. We need more of that. I think maybe
exactly.
part of that is the Holy Spirit in you that's leading you to do that, because, you know, following God, like, we're here to help other people. So I love that. And you wrote about isolation in your book that comes with preparing for Miss America, which I don't know anything about this process, so I was given a little bit of insight into that now. And you said that you really leaned on your family and prayer during that time of isolation.
Yes.
So can you just emphasize for our listeners how important godly community is in our walks, especially when it comes to maintaining your mental health?
Absolutely. So during my year as Miss America, when I talk about the isolation, a lot of people don't know this, but Miss America, well, back when I was Miss America, I mean, the organization is just a completely different thing now. I honestly don't know anything about it anymore. I don't recognize it anymore. But back when I was Miss America, the isolation really was real. When you travel, it's just you and your tour manager. And I mean, I traveled 20,000 miles a month. I was in a different city pretty much every 2 days. I was always at the airport, always in a hotel room. And, you know, there were days where I'd wake up and I didn't even know where I was. I couldn't even remember, you know, where I was. And because you're just changing locations so often, and you always have to be on, and you always have to look perfect, look like Miss America, act like Miss America. And that is a lot. You're constantly exhausted. It's just you and your tour manager, and you don't have, you know, that community around you at all. You don't have your loved ones. And for someone like me, who, you know, I never even lived away from home before Miss America. I lived at home through college and obviously through high school and everything. So I had never experienced any type of isolation, let alone on this level and such a demanding level. And during that time where I had literally no one, I had to lean on my faith because I had nothing else. I had no one else. And so I get lots of DMs and messages all the time from young people asking me, you know, how do you deal with, you know, depression, or how do you deal with feeling like you're not good enough, or you can't just do another day, you can't just get up and do this another day, or whatever. And honestly,
the answer is so easy and it's so clear. And I tell this to everyone, and it is to lean on your faith. All you need is to know that God is in control. All you need is to know that he's going to get you through the next day and the next day and the next day, and that he does have a divine plan for you. And that goes for everyone. You know, it's not just me. It's not just, oh, I won Miss America, so God obviously has a plan for me. That's not real. You know, you have to put in the work, and you have to believe that God has a plan for you and meet him halfway. You know, meet God halfway. Let him be there for you. And when people realize that and open their lives up to that, it's amazing how all your trials and all your troubles just kind of fall to the wayside. It really is amazing how much joy you find in life and in yourself, in your career, and in everything in your life once you open yourself up to believing that.
Yeah, I think it's so easy to compare ourselves. Like you were saying, oh, well, you know, I wasn't Miss America. But God has a different path for every one of us. And that doesn't mean that he loves any one of us more or less, or has bigger things in store for any one of us. It's all so important in his eyes, because really the purpose of being on this earth is to affect the people around us. And we're all put in different positions of, you know, influence to affect those unique people in our spheres. And so for you, that was Miss America and all these other things that you're doing. But for someone else, that might just be, oh, like, I'm going to be a doctor someday, or I'm going to be a teacher or whatever. And God is still going to do incredible things. And so as far as comparison, that, like, we go on social media, we're like, oh, well, this person is doing so much better than me. They're so much further along than me, or they're prettier or whatever. Right. And that's blamed a lot for anxiety. So how do you deal with, like, negative comments on your posts? Like, I know in your book you talk about when you cut your hair to donate it, and, you know, you got cyberbullying and all this crazy stuff. And so do you set boundaries to protect yourself emotionally? Like, how do you cope with that? I mean, then and now.
Well, honestly, it's, you know, people think that it's easier when you have more fame, or you're more in the public eye. Oh, it's easier because you have more fans. Well, I'm here to tell you that the more fans you have, the more haters you have. And I realized that very quickly when I woke up one day and I won Miss America, and suddenly I had 190,000 followers, and you know, everyone knows your name. Everyone's expecting so much, but that means that there are just as many people expecting you to fail and waiting for you to fail. And I talk about that so much in my book, because I want people to know that, you know, just because you're in the public eye doesn't mean that you don't deal with the same things that even high school kids deal with in school, being bullied. You know, it's something that never goes away. There will always be bad people in the world. There will always be people that want you to fail, who are trying to tear you down, who are going to tell you, no, you can't do it. There will always be those people. And I think that if you realize that and let yourself understand that you can't let those things get to you, because you have to know that it'll always be there. And if you let it get to you, it will get to you for the rest of your life, and it will depress you for the rest of your life, because it's never going to go away. Mm-hmm. So I think that the easiest thing to do is to remember that it's happening to every single person that you meet. Every single person is dealing with that in one way or another. Two, pray for those people, the bullies. Pray for them. And, you know, like we in the South say, you know, bless your heart, you know, oh, God bless you. You know, we're going to pray for you. We're going to keep you in our prayers, because obviously you need Jesus. But honestly, feel sorry for those people. Pity those people that they feel the need to use their time during the day to tear others down, while you're using your day to try to build yourself up, build up your career, build up your social media, whatever. You know, people are going to try to tear that down. And you have to understand that there really is nothing you can do to stop it. So you just have to focus on protecting yourself, protecting your mental state. And that goes back to praying. I honestly, anytime I feel stress, I just pray, you know, God, please take my stress away. Please give me peace. You know, and honestly, when it comes to being Miss America, you know, we have those anonymous online chat boards where people can just go on and say anything behind the screen and be anonymous. So they can say whatever they want. No one knows who's saying it. So people get a lot bolder, obviously, because it's anonymous. And dealing with that during my years Miss America was truly, truly awful. The comments, the things that people say. I had someone say that, and this is all in the book, but someone one time said, oh, when I moved to Nashville, oh, she'll be back in Warner Robins, pregnant, and, you know, whatever, in a year. And I was like,
really, like, really, you know, but there's nothing I can do about it. I just have to ignore it. And that's one of the biggest things, is not to even look at it. Don't even look at those comments, you know, delete those comments. Don't look at it. Don't expose yourself to that.
Yeah, I think you have to know what your weakness is, what can get to you, what can trigger that anxiety and depression for you. Because I know, like, even for me as a writer, I'll look at comments sometimes on my articles, and like, I'll sometimes write stuff, you know, about someone else that I don't necessarily agree with, but people will automatically assume that I do, or they'll make false assumptions or something. And then it can affect you because it's like a personal attack. But like you said, you can't take it that way, because these people don't even personally know you. So
Yeah. And there's nothing you can do about it. You have to accept that it's always going to be that way. So don't even give it any attention.
Yeah, and if you can't control it, like you said, my motto that I used to have when I was working in fast food and my life was kind of difficult at that time, I was like, do your best, let God do the rest. That was my motto. And so every time I ran into a difficult customer or something I hated, I was just like, you know, I can't control it. It's out of my hands. It's in God's. And then I'm just going to let it go.
So, exactly.
Yeah. So your book also provides encouragement that God obviously has you where you are for a reason, to prepare you for what's coming next. So you may be in this season of preparation where God does not have you where he ultimately wants to bring you. And like, he maybe even told you that, oh, I'm going to bring you to this place in the future and it's going to be great. But right now, almost like with David, where David was a shepherd and Jesus told him, okay, you're going to be a king one day. And like, he knew that he was anointed for that at a young age, but he didn't get into that until way later. God had to prepare his heart, prepare his character. So you talk about that a little in your book, how God had you go through some experiences like being in the Wizard of Oz and things like that, even to help prepare you for the future. So what does that look like for you?
It's so amazing, honestly, looking back on my life, on the things that I thought were just so random or so trivial, and how now that I'm in this season of my life, I can look back and realize what God was doing in my life then, how all of that was for a purpose and for my future and preparing me, like you said. And, you know, sometimes, especially in the entertainment industry where I am and where I've been for the past 4 years now, going through so much rejection and going through so much where, you know, you almost have something and then you lose it, and then you almost get something else and then you lose it. And it's so hard. The entertainment industry is just so competitive. And sometimes you get in this season of waiting where you don't really have that much going on. You don't feel busy all the time how you want to be. And especially as a 3, an Enneagram 3, I always am looking, you know, for the next goal. Like, what's next? What's the next big thing I'm going to do? And so before I had this kind of wave of things happen with my agency and with the album and with the book and just everything, which I'm loving having so much going on. Before that, I was in this season of like waiting where I didn't have that much going on. I was waiting for events. I was waiting for different opportunities to come. And I just kept praying that they would. And they did. And sometimes when you're in this season where you feel like nothing's going on, God is preparing you. God is preparing you mentally. He's giving you small opportunities to prepare you for what's coming next. Nothing is an accident and nothing is happening without God's hand in it. Everything is happening for a reason. Every step you take, every breath you take, every turn you make. And I'm not trying to write a song here, but I am serious. Everything happens for a specific divine purpose. And in that season of waiting, keep telling yourself that, well, this means that something much bigger is coming. And I had something really big fall through not long ago, a big event that we were super excited about that fell through. And we were just like, oh gosh, you know, like, why does this keep happening? Why do we keep losing these huge events, you know? And then we turn a corner and another huge event comes right up that would have totally conflicted with the other, that wouldn't have worked out, that this event's so much better, so much more pointed towards what we're doing. And we just realize, you know, how foolish we are to ever even doubt that that was what was meant to happen. Mm. So you just have to keep reminding yourself that even in the darkest times of your life, God is preparing you and better things are coming, because God never abandons you. He's always preparing you for what's next.
Yeah, I think that's well said, because it's so important to reflect on what God has done in the past so that when we inevitably enter another, what I call desert season, we can know he's still with us and we can still look forward to his promises and surprises in our future, because
for sure.
Life is definitely not like the same. It's always going to be like, oh, I'm in this season, you know, this year, and then I'm in a different season the next year based on events and circumstances, and we can't let our feelings and emotions be affected by that. And it's so easy to allow that. But then ultimately, when we are in prayer, like you said, we can always call in his peace and his joy no matter what we're going through. And those are his promises to always be with us. So I kind of want to go into also what you briefly mentioned in the beginning, how your mother-in-law died by suicide. So obviously, since this is a mental health podcast, I'm sure we have a lot of listeners who relate to that, unfortunately, or who know someone who's been going through that. And so your mother-in-law, she suffered from alcoholism, mental health issues, unresolved childhood trauma. And you talk about just kind of being confused, obviously, when that happened, because you've never been through anything like that before. And you wrote that she even was a godly woman who was writing a book about how to turn to God in hard times. So of course, the confusion from that too, like, wow, like she had so much going for her. She wanted to help so many people, just kind of this question of why. And at first you felt sadness, but then that sadness kind of turned to anger and bitterness. So can you just go into that a little bit?
Sure. So my husband and I both feel like this was such an important topic to include in the book, because when this happened to us, we realized how, first of all, how little we were informed about all things related to mental health and suicide. And honestly, how informed all people are, because you don't realize how many people deal with this. Like you were saying, everyone knows at least one person who's dealing with this, but it's just, like I said earlier, it's never talked about because people feel like it's such a sensitive issue. No one wants to bring it up. No one wants to hurt anyone's feelings and talk about this, but it needs to be talked about, especially for the survivors, because the survivors are the ones left to then pick up the pieces and deal with it and figure out this puzzle of why there's so many questions. There's anger, there's bitterness, there's sadness. And it's just so much that we can't not talk about it. And this happened to us less than a year ago. It's actually coming up on the first anniversary of it in the holidays. So we're kind of preparing ourselves right now for that. But when it first happened, you know, I obviously you're just struck by sadness and just questions. But then, like you said, for me, it did turn into anger and bitterness. And I started looking and researching and, you know, Googling all, you know, any article, any book, anything that I could read that would help me as the wife, you know, of my husband who lost his mother. It was just, it was hard to find anything that I could relate to that was from that perspective. And I really couldn't find anything. And so I had to kind of figure it out on my own. And when I did figure it out, which did not, it took a long time for me to be, you know, okay again and to be able to honestly even talk about it on like a calm level with my husband, with my family. When I did get to that point, I knew that this was something that I needed to talk about, something that I needed to take on as a new platform, and my husband as well. We actually just recently spoke at the suicide prevention conference in Georgia, and it was only, let's see, it had been 9 months since it happened that we were already, you know, giving a public address on this and talking about it, and that was very soon. But we were so inspired by what happened and just so moved that we knew that it was our responsibility as public figures to take this on and talk about it because of how deeply it affected us and how it affected our family, learning about the different ways that people grieve and learning how to heal our marriage. That was the biggest thing. And that's one of the biggest things I talk about in the book is just how we got through it in our marriage, our relationship, how it's changed and how it's changed for the better. Honestly, those are relationship issues, I feel like, are like the number one issues in the world and personal issues. And so I really made that a big part of the book is just relationships, you know, not with just my exes, but in my marriage right now, dealing with different problems, how we're working through it and how God is guiding us through it to not let it break us down or tear us apart, but to make us stronger in each other. And the suicide was definitely a big, big turning point for our relationship. And it does tear many people apart, but for us, it really did make us stronger. And I was so happy to include, you know, all the details of how we got through that in the book.
I really respect how open you guys are, because I know it must be so hard, of course, for your husband, his own mom, and also for you, because you were there, you witnessed everything as it happened.
Yes.
And then you had to just come to this place of forgiveness. And I can't imagine how hard that is either. I mean, for all of us, forgiveness, reconciliation, that's all so difficult. But ultimately, I think what it looked like when you were writing in your book, this resolve of, okay, I'm going to forgive her. And now I can kind of better move forward from this angerness and this bitterness. So how did you come to that place? And what does that look like?
Well, like I said, it wasn't easy, but honestly, it came, my realization and clarity through all of this came through communication, talking to my husband. And honestly, that was probably the hardest part, because it did make us fight. And I talk about this a lot in the book. It made us fight like hell with each other, just because he had his own feelings and I had my own feelings about it. And they were not the same. And they shouldn't be. We're different people. It was his mother. It wasn't my mother. It was completely different situations. But you have to communicate. You have to fight. And no matter how bad the fights get, how knocked down, drag out they get, you have to keep communicating. You cannot walk away. That's the biggest thing. Because fight after fight, we got closer and closer to being on the same page. We got closer and closer to actually resolving our issues and getting back on the same page with each other, where I understood how he felt and he understood how I felt. And that was the biggest thing. Once our relationship was healed, that was when I could heal and be able to forgive. Mm-hmm. And I knew that this was so important to include in the book because of what I said earlier, how I couldn't find any help on this when I was looking and researching online. I could not find anything from this perspective and on how to save a marriage after something like this. And you know, people don't realize just how traumatizing something like this is, unless, of course, they've been through it themselves. Mm-hmm. And for anyone who has been through it, I really wanted to include this in the book in order to help them and to help their marriage, and just to know that there is an out and there is an end and this will get better, but you just can't give up. That's the biggest thing, is just never give up on yourself or your marriage. You have to keep pushing through, keep communicating, fight as much as you can, because that means you're communicating. Fighting just means you care enough for your relationship to expose your true feelings and to listen to your partner's true feelings. That's all fighting is. And it's so important that couples know that it's okay to fight, especially when things like this happen. Help yourself, help your relationship get back on the same page, and try to see it from the other person's perspective.
Yeah, it's weird to think that fighting is part of the growing process, but it is, because you're not the same people and you have different views and different opinions, and you may clash and then be like, oh, I didn't really see it that way, or I didn't see
exactly
that perspective. And then hopefully you can come to that place of understanding at the end. That's the goal. So you mentioned too that, like, talking about suicide awareness, but also prevention, that you saw signs of your mother-in-law's suicide, but then kind of doubted it, you know, because, oh, she's just going through something like everyone goes through hard times. And so I appreciate you sharing that, because it's so important to remind our listeners and just ourselves that if we notice something's off about somebody, it's so crucial to talk to them about it. And you stress the importance about just talking about suicidal thoughts with somebody, you know, and making it less taboo, especially in church, especially in Christian circles, where there's sometimes the stigma surrounding mental health and, oh, well, if you're depressed, like, just pray it away, you know, don't talk about that.
Right.
Like, Jesus is enough. But I think we need to move away from that and just be people who someone can vent to, and you can just be there to listen, to just sit with somebody during those difficult moments and say, hey, I don't really understand, but I'm here for you. And I think we need more of that, because meaningful connections are really the cure to loneliness, to depression.
Absolutely. And when you, and also just Spencer's mom, you know, she was like you were saying, you know, people just think, oh, well, you know, prayer is enough. That'll get them through it, or that'll help me through my depression. And you know what? For a lot of people, it is. But for someone like even Spencer's mom, she was the most godly woman that you would ever meet. You know, like she, that was her life. And that's what she, that's how she, you know, raised my husband to be such an incredible man. That's how she raised her kids. And so even for someone like her, you know, she needed more than prayer, clearly. You know, she needed communication. And she was the poster child for, you know, raising your kids right, to believe in God, to believe in their faith, and, you know, no alcohol, no drugs, no suicide. Those are the three things that, you know, you don't want in your life, because she had dealt with that so much in her own life with her mother and her brother. And so even for someone like that, who was so godly and just such a faithful woman, she needed more than that. And, you know, we saw, like you said, you know, we saw those little signs, those little things. But we all thought, you know, oh, she's the strong one. She's got it together. You know, she's just going through a rough patch. But even if it's the most godly person that you know, still talk to them. Still ask them if everything's okay. Still make sure that you're doing everything that you can, because God gave us each other. He gave us other people for a reason. You know, we're supposed to rely on him, but we're supposed to be able to rely on each other too. You have to be there for people. That's what God calls us to do. And I truly feel like it was a God calling for me to write this book and try to use my experiences to help other people, you know, through theirs.
Yeah, and not just your book, but we were talking earlier, your YouTube channel, you're very open on that as well. And I think that that's great for people to just be able to see your faces and to see how passionate you are about what you're talking about and the message that you're spreading. So if people who are listening want to connect with you through your YouTube channel, want to find your book, where should they go?
Absolutely. So obviously my book is available on Amazon. You know, it's called Miss Unlikely. I don't even know if we've said that yet. The book is called Miss Unlikely. And I'm sure all the info will be right there when this airs. But yeah, so the book's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And also my Instagram is at Real Betty Maxwell. And my YouTube channel is just Betty Maxwell. So I'm very easy to find on all the social media outlets. So definitely, you know, ever since Spencer and I went through this suicide with his mother, we keep telling people, reach out to us, please. Mm-hmm. Like, we are here. We are on social media. We're everywhere. That's the great thing about social media, is it is such an amazing outlet for people to reach out, find friends, find support. We're here. Please DM me. Please message Spencer, either of us. You know, we're here to talk. We're here to help. We're just, you know, trying to live our best lives and do what God calls us to do, and that's help other people. So please, you know, if you're dealing with something, reach out. I would love to talk to you. And obviously you can find me on Instagram at Real Betty Maxwell, and on YouTube, Betty Maxwell. So yeah, I would love to hear from you guys.
I love that. Well, thank you everyone for joining us, and tune in next time for another episode in our mental health series on the Charisma News podcast.